Hello, and welcome to the episode 27 of What a Fab Day. I am your host, Simon Mas. Some of today's highlights include a matter of principle, more Parisian performances, and a bright new contract. Let's start in order. In 1961, the Beatles, with Pete Best on drums, performed for their sixth of 31 total nights at the Aintree Institute in Liverpool. Same venue 1 year later. On the 27th of January 1962, the lads, still featuring Pete Best on drums, performed at the Aintree Institute for the last time. The problem was not the venue per se, but a deep dislike that manager Brian Epstein had matured towards promoter Brian Kelly. The needle that broke the camel's back was tonight's payment of £15, about £320 in 2020 money. The sum was given at the end of the show in loose change and coins, something that Epstein found so upsetting to mention the episode in his 1964 autobiography. It seems that the point, as far as Epstein was concerned, was that a payment in coins was dismissive of the Beatles, and the refusal to get a payment in notes resulted in Epstein vowing that the band would have never played at a BK Promotions event ever again. This might seem of little consequence in hindsight, now that we know that the Beatles became what they became. But think about it from a 1962 perspective. If you have a manager with little or no experience in the music world, and a band that has built a reputation only locally, taking a bold step over such a matter of principle against a promotion agency that had engaged the band quite a bit in the previous year and a half. It was a bold step of utter confidence, to say the least. And that's the beauty of What a Fab Day's organization. You can immediately tell that 1 year down the line, the move could still be seen as a foolish outburst of pride, considering that on the 27th of January 1963, the Beatles performed at the Three Coins Club in Manchester, a club partially owned by DJ Jimmy Savile. Despite their first single being released, not a small feat by any stretch, the soon-to-be Fab Four were still playing in a coffee club in a cellar. The difference from 1962, of course, is that the Beatles were about to explode with a UK tour and no shortage of performances in other, often better, venues. But still, I reckon that Epstein's decision should be food for thought for everyone. In 1964, the Beatles performed at the Olympia Theatre in Paris, France. Meanwhile, in New York, 5,800 tickets for the band's performance at the Carnegie Hall for the 12th of February went on sale. They would be all sold in 24 hours. On this date in 1967, the Beatles renewed their EMI recording contract. The new contract lasted for 9 years and enforced that all the Beatles' releases were to be issued in the same fashion, same cover, same tracklist around the world. In 1968, Kenny Everett interviewed John Lennon for his BBC Radio 1 programme The Kenny Everett Show, to be broadcast on the 4th of February between 10 a.m. and 12 noon. In the interview, a tired or drugged John Lennon tried to reconstruct the story behind Strawberry Fields Forever, but he couldn't remember the song exactly, claiming that the long time needed to complete it made him lose contact with whatever initial meaning the song had for him. John admitted that the music reflected his confused state of mind at the time. In 1969, the Beatles and Billy Preston had yet another Get Back session, the 16th since the start. In the Apple Studios, the band worked hard on the title track, despite the fact that only a very short portion of the recordings made today surfaced in an official release. I'm talking about John singing a parody of the lyrics. Sweet Loretta Fart, she thought she was a cleaner, but she was a frying pan. The band also decided to rehearse other songs that could be recorded for the climax of the project, even if a final decision on the possibility to play live on the rooftop of the Apple building had not been taken yet. They focused on Let It Be, The Long and Winding Road, Don't Let Me Down, and I've Got a Feeling. Naturally, many more songs were performed, including Oh Darling, Old Brown Shoes, and a cover of the 1958 Jimmy McCracklin hit, The Walk. The session also produced a 10-minute, 54-second untitled jamming song, which was exactly that, a long, unstructured instrumental jam that, according to Mark Lewson, who had the privilege to listen to it, was best left unreleased. Finally, three events of note took place in 1970. In the morning, Jeff Emerick was at the EMI studios to mix The Inner Light in stereo at Apple's request. The session ran between 10 and 11:30 a.m. The reasons for the remix are not clear, as the stereo version of the song remained unreleased until 1981. In the same studios, starting at 7 p.m., the Plastic Ono Band started and completed a new song, Instant Karma. While this is not Beatles' work, strictly speaking, it is interesting that the session was produced by Phil Spector at the suggestion of George Harrison. George also played electric guitar during the recording, along with John on acoustic guitar, Alan White on drums, Klaus Voormann on bass, and Billy Preston on electric piano. The basic track was taped between 7 p.m. and midnight. Overdubs, including a choir featuring all the members of the band, plus Yoko Ono, Mal Evans, and the patrons of the Hatchet's nightclub, who evidently had been gathered at last minute for the occasion, were all recorded by 3 a.m., and four stereo mixes of the song were completed by the time the session was wrapped up at 4 a.m. The fourth mix was chosen to be the band's next single, backed by Yoko Ono's Who Wests in the Wind, recorded privately, session details unknown. John was ecstatic about the process. He loved that Phil Spector was light on technical details and that he could write a song for the Plastic Ono Band, record it and release it so quickly, something that had become impossible with the Beatles at this stage. The American version of the single featured a new mix, prepared by Spector in Los Angeles a few days later, without John's knowledge. It was typical procedure for Spector to do such a thing. Later on today, in Los Angeles, Ringo Starr filmed a number of cameos for NBC's Rowan and Martin's Laugh In, a popular comedy show. The show, filmed in front of a live audience at the NBC television studio in Burbank, California, was aired on the 23rd of February, between 8 and 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This concludes another episode of What a Fab Day. Please remember to visit www.simonmas.com/support to find ways in which you can show the appreciation for my efforts, including ways that won't cost you a penny. In the episode description, you'll get a link to the bibliographical Amazon affiliate link list and one to the complete list of songs tried out during the Get Back project. For the moment, I wish you a good day and a fab continuation.
Simon Mas, music you love.